Chapter 9. The Belle Époque. In 1883 to 1884, the Spanish physician Jaime Ferran developed what he claimed to be a cholera vaccine and deployed it on thousands of patients during a cholera outbreak in Valencia in 1885. Doubts quickly arose about its efficacy, and the vaccine was not generally adopted in Europe. In 1883, Edwin Klebs identified the bacterium, Corynebacterium diphtheriae, as the causative agent of diphtheria. In 1888, Pasteur Institute scientists Émile Roux and Alexandre Yersin discovered that this bacterium produces a toxic substance that seemed to cause the illness. They characterized it as diphtheria toxin. In the same year, the German scientists Emil von Behring and Paul Ehrlich announced they had developed passive serum therapies against the diphtheria toxin. In 1901, the first Nobel Prize for Physiology and Medicine was awarded to von Behring for his work on the development of a diphtheria antitoxin. In that same year in St. Louis, 13 children died of tetanus-contaminated diphtheria antitoxin. Such disasters did little to dampen enthusiasm for von Behring's invention. He and his colleague, Paul Ehrlich, and their senior colleague, Robert Koch, were fervently admired and revered. To the public, these scientists seemed to occupy a higher plane than ordinary mortals. Their purported knowledge of nature, the causes of death, and how to vanquish them seemed to place them closer to God. Ehrlich and Koch were also awarded Nobel Prizes during the first decade of the 20th century. The prestige they attained further elevated the disciplines of bacteriology and immunology as the primary research focus of medical science. At the same time, during this so-called Belle Époque, between the end of the Franco-Prussian War in 1871 and the start of World War I in 1914, great strides were made to improve the standard of living in the major cities of Europe. In Paris, Baron Haussmann and his engineer, Eugène Belgrand, designed and oversaw construction of modern sewer and drinking water infrastructure. Starting with Maidstone, England in 1897, cities began chlorinating their municipal water supplies, which further reduced drinking water contamination. In 1891, Parliament passed the Public Health Act to improve London's horrible air quality. With the reduction of London fog, as coal smoke was called, the high prevalence of bronchitis also declined. With these marked improvements of public sanitation, the populations of cities were subjected to much smaller pollution and pathogen loads. By the year 1900, conditions were beginning to improve markedly, even for the urban poor. Agriculture in Europe, especially with foods that originated in the Americas, such as tomatoes, potatoes, sweet potatoes, corn, and cassava, became steadily more productive during this period. Synthetic fertilizer production using the Haber-Bosch process, construction of railways, shipping canals, and new machinery for storing and transporting grain enabled developing nations to source and store food during times of scarcity. Rickets and scurvy, which were still common in the 19th century, were largely eradicated, as well as general malnutrition that made humanity susceptible to infectious diseases. Robert Koch and his colleagues focused on identifying and characterizing the pathogenic microbes that caused disease. They devoted far less attention to the physical condition and the environment of the people who fell ill. For most of the 19th century, the urban poor were malnourished, constantly breathed coal smoke, drank sewage-contaminated water, lived in crowded tenement buildings with poor ventilation and just one water closet on each floor, worked long hours in factories with no leisure time or even sunlight during the winter, slept in cold rooms during the winter, and wore and slept on dirty linens. At any given time, a shocking percentage of people in the 19th century was infected with tuberculosis or syphilis, or both, which made them yet more susceptible to getting sick with other illnesses. As they became better nourished, less stressed, and were no longer drinking sewer water, their general health and immunity improved, and they became less susceptible to all infectious diseases. At the turn of the century in the United States, a major sanitation campaign was waged to clean up the milk supply for crowded cities, such as New York. As Dr. Stanford T. Shulman noted in his paper, The History of Pediatric Infectious Diseases. An exceptionally important advance during the late 19th century and early 20th century was the result of efforts by concerned pediatricians and others to secure a safe and sanitary milk supply for infants. Non-breastfed infants experienced particularly high mortality rates because much of the cow milk supply was swill milk, which came from cows fed only distiller's mash, housed in incredibly filthy conditions, without fresh air, exercise, or hay, many of which were also infected by bovine tuberculosis. Job Lewis Smith, who was one of the first to differentiate rubella from rubeola, and wrote several papers on neonatal tetanus, served as the second APS president in 1890, 18 years after he had written in his textbook that more than half of New York's infants who were spoon-fed, that is, not nursed or wet-nursed, in the summer, died before fall. He strongly urged milk sterilization and wrote and spoke about the dangers of artificial infant feeding. The efforts of Dr. Smith and other doctors persuaded the municipal administrations of Chicago, New York, and other cities to clean up the swill milk dairies. In 1909, Chicago mandated the pasteurization of milk sold in the city. New York City did the same in 1914, and most other American cities soon followed.